Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello everyone everywhere, this is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to back to part two of our ongoing interview with Stan Dale. Stan is just a fascinating person to interview. His intellect, his wisdom, his experiences, his discoveries. He's a modern-day Indiana Jones. He's well-documented. And today we're talking, well, we started the interview yesterday talking about current events that are affecting the United States and the world in the news. Things that you can see every night. And we are talking about the identification of several candidates for the Antichrist, if this is the time where we're about to enter the tribulation. And we've narrowed it down, actually Stan has narrowed down to possibly the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. His initials are MBS, I can't remember, Mohammed Salman is the last name, bin Salman. And we're getting ready to identify that he is the most likely contender. And you can see him forging these alliances with Israel. And that would more or less coalesce the Muslims to go against Iran, which would benefit the United States, and more or less start introducing this peace treaty. And folks, we're going to pick it up right there. Now, I don't want you to be lost where we pick up the interview at. So go to standale.com. About halfway down on the right, you'll see a topic called Show Images with a microphone there. Click on that. Go to the Hagman Report. And on those slides, go down to about slide 13. And you'll see the click on that slide, and you'll see where we're going to be talking about. We'll be picking up the interview right there.
You always have long things, for people just listening and not seeing the, seeing what we're talking about. There's 6 columns of possible Antichrist candidates, we'll call them that. And, there's gaps in all the other columns where Mohammed bin Salman is solid all the way down to the bottom of the page. There's information in every different category that Stan has, where all the other ones have gaps in there. So that's what he's talking about. His is solid.
There's a gap in all of them. I'm looking over here at Erdogan of Turkey, and we know he's grabbing for power. We know that he thinks that the former Raja or whatever of Turkey there, whose name was Soleimani, was, hung the moon. He thinks that Soleimani is great. Well, Soleimani is a derivative of the name Solomon. Mm-hmm. Now, that's important. I digress a bit, but the clue in Revelation 13 about the Antichrist, everybody's taken it to mean that, his 666 means the gematric sum of the guy's name in some language. Was it Greek? Was it English? Was it Arabic? Mm-hmm. Was it Hebrew? And I looked at that and I thought, Revelation 13:18, have we missed the boat here? Doesn't the Bible have the information to answer every code that the prophets put in? Okay. So I said, Revelation 13:18, here is wisdom. Okay. So go look for where wisdom is in the Bible. Okay. Well, wise guys, not the mafia meaning, but wisdom was King Solomon.
I was going to say Solomon was supposed to be the one given all the wisdom.
So. Right. So you look at that and you say, okay, so the Antichrist will be like Solomon, maybe be named Solomon. Then it says further in Revelation 13:18, let him who has understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. Count the number. Well, that's why everybody thought, right, okay, that was Gematria, some of the letters of the name and whatever. But wait a minute. The number is 666. Where in the Bible is that associated with wisdom guy? Well, surprise, surprise. King Solomon collected, earned, mined, whatever. You got in tributes. 666 talents of gold every year. That's mighty. Now, he was rich. He is known for 666 you know, talents mm-hmm. of gold.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, a powerful man with an army and whatever. And he did go bad, you know, he with
yep,
his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went bad. But also he did something else. He, when he was still in gracious with God and had finished building the temple, you know, Solomon's temple, King Solomon called the men of Israel together, all the people together around, and he made a long speech dedicating this temple to God. And at the end of the speech, he prayed to God to bless this, and fire came down out of the sky
yep.
and ignited it, right? Okay. Yep. If you go down to, I think it's in Daniel, where you're talking about the Antichrist's age, he's going to cause fire to come down in the sight of men. Yeah. In the Bible case of Solomon, it was in the men of Israel. But this is for the whole world when we get to Daniel. You see
right,
what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
And with the technology we've got today, he could do that. He could drop, you know, lightning bolts out of orbit somewhere and strike a target, and, you know, perhaps the new Temple of Solomon. Again, on that issue, too, the Temple of Solomon was a small building compared to the temple in the time of Jesus, you know, Herod's temple. And people keep thinking that the Temple Mount is where Herod's temple was built. I don't doubt that it was probably in that area and possibly on the mount, but it was most likely a place where the Roman garrison that was stationed there in Jerusalem was housed. It's the right size. It's laid out the same way they did the ones they did in Europe. And if that was where the Roman garrison was, it would be above where the temple of Herod was. And the temple of Herod was built on the same site as the temple of Solomon, but bigger. So if the Roman plateau up there, the Temple Mount, is where they were looking down mm-hmm. on the temple, then the temple would be off of the Temple Mount and down at that corner at the place called Ophel, O-F-E-L, in Jerusalem. And there are people now digging and excavating it, archaeologists, and they have found what may be the lead to real Solomon's temple right there.
Mm.
Okay. Ancient stuff underground, all buried and rocks strewn everywhere. A river flowing or a stream flowing where they needed to have the water for the sacrifice in the Solomon's temple. Mm-hmm. Everything points to that. So our Antichrist could go there, build a new Solomon's temple on that footprint, and fulfill again the prophecies in Daniel. In alliance with MBS is Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Now Erdogan. His news people have openly stated here in the last 3 or 4 years that why don't we let the Jews build the Temple of Solomon, not the Herodian Temple, but the Temple of Solomon. We'll let them have that and they can worship there and that'll be okay. It'll be out of our way. So there's already precedence mm-hmm. there for Turkey to help. And of course, Mohammed bin Salman think it's great. All of them to build the Temple of Solomon down on the foot of the wall that holds up the Temple Mount.
Mm-hmm.
These things are so incredibly exciting and happening so quickly that, you know, you could miss it if you blinked your eyes.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, that, you know, things are accelerating. And the Bible's clear that in the time of the end, they'll begin to accelerate basically out of control. That once it starts, nobody's going to be able to stop it until the return of Christ.
It's like that snowball rolling downhill, isn't it? We're down to
exactly.
bottom.
Yeah, you know, we're sitting in the car looking up at the side of the mountain as the whole thing sliding towards you. It hasn't hit you yet, but you're not going to escape it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They're just wondrous things happen if you just pay attention to prophecy and treat it as the Bible is true. This is one of the big problems that the millennial age has here with the millennials being young and you know, life is wonderful and have my latte and, you know, play my games. They have missed the relevance of the writings of the Bible, the Old and New Testament both. And they don't think that they're relevant. They think a lot of them are myths, like, you know, Garden of Eden was a myth. Well, maybe they might let Atlantis be a real thing, but even that's probably a myth. You know, nobody could find it. And so to them, there are just no proofs that they need to pay attention to what's in the Bible. That's why the good Lord laid his hand on me years ago in 1988 was the first time he grabbed hold of me. It was strange. I was out in the backyard of my home there in Australia. It was the evening time. The stars were out.
I remember this story, folks. Pay attention. This is good. Go ahead.
I didn't know I told you that before. But
go ahead.
Anyway, there I was looking at our rabbit hutch there that I built for our two rabbits. And, you know, my own female. They were down there, and it was nighttime, and they were kind of sniffing around with, you know, the stuff in the cage looking for something to eat. And I stood there looking at them, leaning on my shovel, and all of a sudden, you know, I was thinking about, this is kind of like how God was looking on Adam and Eve in the little garden he built for them, you know, just kind of aimless kind of thinking. And I turned kind of up like this and looked down the driveway, which is dark, you know. All of a sudden, it was like all the pieces of a moving jigsaw puzzle, the stars, the rabbit hutch, me, the driveway, everything went and locked into place and moved together. And it was as though that was a moment when I was told, this is what you need to do. And I thought, Adam and Eve, Garden of Eden? Well, I don't know. And I walked into the house after that and began a search, which finished in 2014, with locating the actual, the real Garden of Eden, identifying it by every clue that's in the Bible, saying, is this clue such and such? Prove it over here. And once I proved that, to me, it meant you can tell the millennials and anybody else that doesn't believe, the Bible is correct. If it's only a historical document, it is correct. If this did happen, if you talk to the local natives in Africa where this the Garden of Eden is in Tanzania, they will tell you where it is. It's called the Ngorongoro, and it is where God came down, made man, put him into this crater floor, and that was Adam and Eve. They called them different names, but the tribe said it. And then when God was finished with them, he put them outside the crater, which was the garden, into the land next to it, and then God went back up into the heavens. Now, you know, people say, oh, well, that's Africa's Garden of Eden. No, that's the real Garden of Eden. Four rivers came out of there, four rivers, and I found them. And by looking at the exact words of the Hebrew, piece by piece, looking at the tenses, the various references and uses of the word for the river came out of Eden, it says in the Bible in English. But it says the river came up out of Eden into the garden like a tree. Yep. It branched out. And I found it's a 20-acre area in the northern part of the Garden of Eden plateau here where a huge, huge geyser of water, you know, that big in diameter, came up ages ago and carved out four rivers that made the rivers, that one became the Indian Ocean, the other was the Nile or either the Red Sea, and the other two are the Tigris and Euphrates over in, you know, around Iran and up into the mountains, part of the Mediterranean coast. All that you can see when you look at my DVD on it. But the point is, I was able to prove physical location by looking at what the Lord showed me and realizing that the earth used to be smaller by 25%.
Yeah.
And when I figured that and started researching that, other scientists have been saying, yes, the earth was smaller, and it expanded suddenly in a catastrophic event. Now, it would take me 2 years, well, year and a half, to find Atlantis was part of – was where Noah lived, and it was destroyed by an asteroid or several asteroids hitting – at the same time and virtually sinking it in the backwash. But these asteroids hit the earth so hard that it flipped the surface upside down. East was west, west was east. Egyptians recorded that. The Chinese recorded that. And I knew that I had the whole picture then when I looked at the Garden of Eden, Atlantis, and you know, the hybrid beings that were to be destroyed by the surge of tidal waves and the rain and stuff. Even if you look at the dinosaurs, if you see how chunky their legs are, okay, they were all killed, but their musculature was huge. Why did they have to have such powerful muscles? Just, you know, some of them had it for bodies that didn't need it. Why? Because at smaller diameter, the gravity of the earth is concentrated. As you get closer to the core, it increases the gravity. And that's why there was more oxygen. You know, people lived longer. They had better oxygen because the atmosphere is compressed as well. There are just so many things that this now opens up the doorway to that, you know, I'm intrigued by the number of people that are already doing other research papers on this. That was the key. And the other key was, did this happen a million years ago? Is the universe 15 billion years old? And another friend of mine, Barry Satterfield, an astronomer, who was in Australia with me, but he's now up here in Washington State, he took over the work of a Dr. Brown, who died and left his work with him, And for the Australian government, Barry set up a study of what Dr. Brown had said. And it was saying, his paper was, that two things. First of all, you can backtrack the wobble of the Earth, where it is now at 23.5 degrees, back to when it was upright and hit by something that flipped it. You can do what's called a back precession formula. And it comes back and it dates the time of that impact, 2345 BC, a good time for a flood.
6,000 years ago.
Well, it was 4,000 for 4, that, but 6,000.
Yeah, yeah.
But then you say, well, okay, if that's the case, then Garden of Eden would have been, 4,000 BC or somewhere around there. But all these things are in thousands, not millions. So then Barry said, look, you know what? I've been studying the speed of light, and it's been slowing down, physically slowing down over the last 200 years. Hmm. And he does the proper papers on it. Look at Barry Setterfield on the internet and look at his papers and discussion on it, and you'll see a very obvious thing. All the leading physicists of the world that make cosmological models for the age of the universe say it started at a pinpoint, big bang, and the whole universe as we know it now was all crammed down into this little tiny space,
right?
Very dense. And you can actually use their calculations to show that the speed of light, and hence the method we'd use for radiocarbon 14 dating or radiocarbon dating for the age of things, is all wrong, because we're using the speed of light as it is today. But at the Big Bang, it was 10 with 60 zeros behind it faster. Mm-hmm. So that everything aged a lot quicker and then started to slow down on a curve to where we are now. So when you correct man's mistake there, we have a thing that agrees with science and agrees with the Bible. And that's been my whole objective, is to be able to show people proof in modern idiom about the existence of all these things.
Amen. Yeah, when I interrupted when you started your story last time, I thought you were going to talk about when you told God, you needed a sign from him to
that came a little bit later. I moved to the second house there. And yeah, it is an interesting story. What happened was I had moved two houses down on that street and where I could get a bigger property and build a workshop and a writing studio. And one night I'd been writing, and it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd finished for the night, or the morning in that case maybe, and I was closing up the studio and close the door, going to walk probably 50, 60 feet to the house and go to bed. Well, I walked out, and there was one solitary tree there by my window, and I reached over and put my hand on the limb of that tree, and I was looking up and looking at all the stars, and, I thought, well, are you there? Am I really talking to you, or am I just talking to the air? That was kind of my wonder about, right? Mm-hmm. I guess people do this every now and then, it's logical. And then I let go of the tree, and I turned, and I thought, well, I'll go into the house now. And then all of a sudden, I saw over the top of the house in the night sky there, right out there in the street, somebody was playing with Roman candles, and there was this green one coming up with sparks and everything coming off of it, heading over toward where I was standing. And I thought, well, why would anybody be shooting Roman candles off, in front of the house like that? And I thought, well, it's getting bigger, it's getting closer, and it still isn't here yet. And then I realized that's not out in the street. That's way down the coast, and it's an asteroid or a comet or something coming my direction, a meteorite for sure. And it was coming. It was silent because it was so fast. It was way ahead of the sound wave. And it came and it came and it came. And right over, and it just lit up everything green from the nitrogen. I mean, it was a big thing that split into four pieces later in the forest behind me. Well, then the shockwave came, boom, like that, and it shook the house. My daughter was asleep, and she woke up and thought Martians had landed because of the green color. And I went into the house, and I said, wow, wow. And then I said, right, Lord, you and me. just kidding. So yeah, that was the case for that one, and yeah,
that's what I thought you were leading towards on that one. I said, oh, this is good. You got to listen to this.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. That's when it happened.
Man. Well, let's shift gears just a little bit. We're still going to be talking about the same concept. What about everything going on with Russia right now, as far as the Russian meddling in the election, as far as the Russians trying to attack the grid? The sanctions put in recently by the Trump administration. How is all that going to tie together with what we're talking about with the Prince Solomon, MBS?
Well, I think that probably what we're going to see is America will be invaded by Russia, China, and possibly Saudi Arabia sometime in the near future. America has to be taken out as a major military player in the Middle East. And to do that, we have to hit the infrastructure here, maybe with an electromagnetic pulse bomb over the United States. Now, we've all been focusing our attention over on North Korea with mm-hmm. Kim Jong-un, thinking that he might detonate an EMP bomb over the country. And that's another issue we can talk about. My partner, I've invented a way to protect your home from that. But it's not going to protect the rest of the country. And the grid's going to go down when they hit us with an EMP. Russia can do it. China can do it. MBS can only do it if he gets weapons from somebody else that's developed such a thing. And like that
Pakistan,
might be what he's asking.
Yeah. Pakistan?
Yep. Yeah. I don't know whether they're into EMP pulse bombs yet, but, even a normal nuke detonated at the right altitude will produce a type of EMP. Anyway, what I see is there's going to be a bit of skullduggery go on where MBS is going to lead his 41-nation Arab consortium to destroy Iran. And that's going to place him and his armies and all of his allies in Syria. Mm-hmm. That's why Syria is such a hotbed for the United States, Russia, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, everybody. They're looking at that gateway, which Russia wants to control because it gives them a seaport in the Mediterranean as part of the Syrian coastline. Mm-hmm. And because of this, I think what's going to happen is if they do strike Iran and neutralize the nuclear threat,
right,
what's going to happen is they'll have this army there with all the weapons and stuff. If you look on the Coast to Coast AM show images page at image 55, I think it's important to see what we're talking about here. When you get there, tell me.
55. Got it.
The Saudi-led Islamic 55. Military Alliance. You see that?
Yep.
Okay. This is just maybe 10 of the top countries. Yeah, 10 of them out of the 41-nation consortium. Hmm. And, hold on. Somebody's ringing. I think it's me. Let me just turn that off. There we go. And that Saudi-led alliance, if you look at this graph, it has an army of 4 million combat soldiers. That's more than we've got, right? Yep. 5 million in reserves, 2,500 jet fighters, 21,000 tanks, 461 assault helicopters, nuclear, from Pakistan, and 44,000 armored vehicles. And if you look at that, it means that, they have got the firepower sitting there in Syria. They can just turn left down the Golan Heights, which is originally part of Syria, and what, few miles, and they just roll downhill to Israel. Yeah. And I'm thinking we're going to see, a trick, I don't know what the chess move is, but anyway, that Mohammed bin Salman is going to then turn on Israel. It's like the scorpion can't change its tactics, Mm-hmm. They said they're peaceful, but they're going to go after Israel.
Yep.
Now,
cement his role as the quote unquote God of the world, basically.
Right. Now, I think he's going to find a surprise there for him because Israel's not going to give up without a fight.
Right.
Now, they have nuclear weapons that are very interesting in that they're the type of neutron bombs that can kill life in the immediate detonation range,
yep,
but leave buildings and stuff intact.
Yep.
Okay, now, if I understand it correctly, and Holly's put that in her book, Prophetic Perils, about, a third or more of this invading army will be destroyed right there by fire.
Yep.
And that would then make Mohammed bin Salman, it would lessen his power. It might even wound him or kill him. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the false prophet has to come after the Antichrist, and the false prophet does a lot of things like numbering and that kind of stuff in the name of the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. And if Erdogan is that guy, of Turkey, his country there is where you see that Roman or Greek thing for the seat of Pergamon, Satan's seat. And mm-hmm. from there, he might actually take over for Mohammed bin Salman and sing his praises to the world and do things in his name, because Prince Mohammed bin Salman can no longer do it, either by being wounded or being dead, and then brought back to life or something. I don't know, but those prophecies are something I have to look at later to get more detail on. But you see this forming here as
forming,
And if you look at slide 57 on that show images page here, I was telling you about with George Nuri's thing. Okay. Slide 57 shows a really interesting thing. Click on the picture. And you see that Mohammed bin Salman, Prince Salman, bought the picture that Da Vinci painted of Jesus with a clear ball, like a crystal ball in his hand. Huh. And then if you look at the promotion, the video promotion of NEOM, MBS's new city, he has in it a woman holding a crystal ball like that. Hmm. And then if you look over at the meeting where President Trump was being feted by King Salman, you see him and the president the leader of Egypt there. I can't remember his name. They're all putting their hands on a globe of the earth lit up. All this globe symbolism. And it tells you that young Prince bin Salman is not satisfied with just taking over the assets of his country. He's going for the world. And his mother, he's locked his mother up for 2 years.
Really?
He won't let her talk to his father, King Salman. Now, I think, being close with his mother, she knows his true nature and does know something about where he's headed. And he did not want her to talk to his father, her husband, the king, because it would impair MBS's efforts to gain control of the country from his father. So he's locked her up. Nobody knows exactly where, but for 2 years she's been out of touch.
Wow.
And that's why.
I did read that she had been not seen for 2 years.
That's why.
Hey, folks. Pastor Bob here. Oh, man, this clock just keeps running so fast. It's just getting good, too. We're going to have to wrap this one up for today. The clock just won't let us continue. But tomorrow, I'm going to start asking Stan some interesting questions about his work in the anti-gravity field and the possible existence of UFOs and extraterrestrials, and whether or not these will be identified by the government as our friends, and they're here for peaceful reasons, and what would precipitate their disclosure. And we're going to start talking about that tomorrow. So you want to come back and hear this. This is going to get interesting. Till next time, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.